Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Sanhedrin, Daf Kuf Yud Beis. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the Shiur. And even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. At the top of Kuf Yud Beis, Maseches Sanhedrin, the Gemara asks a question. Ibaya Laho, Hudhu Me'alehen Mahu. Let us say you have an Ir Hanidachas, a city of idol worshippers, but unlike in the previous Gemaras where we saw that you needed to have seducers, instigators, to instigate the masses, what happens if the population on their own, without a formal instigator, decided to engage in Avodah Zarah? So you can see that we now have an Aleph written in, and the next line, O Dilma Beis, two sides of the question. So, do we say as follows, V'yadichu Omrachmona? The Torah uses the word V'yadichu, which indicates some specific instigators that convince the people, V'lo shehudchu me'alehem, and not that on their own they decided, O Dilmo, afilu hudchu me'alehem, or is it may be possible that the Torah condemns a city as an Ir Hanidachas, even if they decided on their own. Toshma. So let's try to conclude this. We bring an attempted proof to decide this question from the following Tanaic source. Hidichua noshim uktanim. It says that if women or minors convinced a city to practice Avodah Zarah and they listened, it does not become an Ir Hanidachas. Rather, all those who violated the prohibition of idolatry will be judged as individuals. Amai, why do you say this? Lehevei kehudchu me'alehem. Why let it be no worse than a case of the people convincing themselves? So what do we see from here? That convincing themselves is not grounds for becoming an Ir Hanidachas. The more answer is no, this is not conclusive. Hanoch Bosar Nafshayu Grady. Rashi points out, Bosar Nafshayu Grady, Umasehem Ma'aseh, Va'adukim Biyoser, Hoyul Ume Atzmom Heim Nidochen. It could be that a city of people who convinced themselves, who on their own they determined to practice Avodah Zarah, is a more serious matter. And that may, yes, be grounds for becoming an Ir Hanidachas. V'dinhu Shi'asi Ir Hanidachas. The Gemara continues, Hani, the case featured in the Tanaic source, where we saw Noshim or Ketanim convincing the people, Bosar Noshim Uktanim Grady. The masses there are following the opinion of the Noshim Uktanim, who are not so, and therefore the people themselves are not so involved with the Avodah Zarah. Contrary to the case of people convincing themselves. So, what do we see as far as the Gemara structure? The Gemara attempted to conclude that Hudchu Me'aleim is not sufficient grounds for becoming an Ir Hanidachas based on the case of Noshim Ektanim. The Gemara then answers that that is an inconclusive proof. It could be that, in fact, deciding to serve Avodah Zarah on their own is yes grounds for becoming an Ir Hanidachas. The case of Noshim Ektanim is a lower level type offense, and that's because the people there are not on their own making the decision, but they're rather following the desired, as the expressed desires of the Noshim Ektanim. Ad Shiyudach Ruba. The Mishnah said that an Ir Hanidachas is not determined to be such until Rov, the majority of the city, have violated idolatry. Hechi Avdinan. Judicially or procedurally, how do we establish the Rov people violating Avodah Zarah? Rashi points out, Hechi Avdinan, Hech Nasin Ruba Nidochin. How do you establish that the majority have become idolatrous? After all, you will need to have witnesses and a warning for each individual. The Gemara answers, Omar Rabbi Yehuda. Notice we've double underlined Rabbi Yehuda to draw your attention to the fact that Rabbi Yehuda is going to be followed by Ula in attempting to resolve this question. How procedurally do we establish a city to be an Ir Hanidachas? So Rabbi Yehuda says as follows. Donin, the courts will judge, the Choivshin, and will, after coming to a conclusion that a person violated Avodah Zarah, will then incarcerate him. Donin, the Choivshin, and the next person, likewise, they'll judge him, come to a conclusion that he also is guilty, and lock him up. And this will continue on and on until they reach the majority of the city, if be the case. And at that point, it will be established that that it's an Ir Hanidachas. We've mentioned, of course, in previous Shiurim that there's a difference between a private person who violates Avodah Zarah, who engages in idolatry, as opposed to a public. In the case of the public, they are executed by the sword, which is a lower level penalty than execution by stoning. However, the property of the city is to be destroyed. The property of all those of the inhabitants of the city is destroyed. Masha Enkain, as opposed to the case of a private person involved in idolatry, he gets the more serious form of execution, the stoning, but his property is inherited by his heirs. Ula now questions Rav Yehuda's resolution of how to determine an Ir Hanidachas by judging and incarcerating until you get to the rove, until you get to the majority. Amar Lei Ula Nimtzata Mane Es Dino Dinon Shel Elu. You're causing a delay in carrying out the verdict with regard to all those that you've incarcerated until you reach the majority point. And there's a prohibition of being of Inui Hadin. Once there is a verdict reached, you must carry out the conclusion of the verdict, namely the execution of the verdict, immediately. Elo Omar Ula. Donin Vesoklin, Donin Vesoklin. Ula says that, very simply, every individual is judged and is executed as an individual, and this continues until half of the city is determined, has been executed through stoning. From above the halfway mark, the penalty that will follow for the rest of the violators will be saif, will be execution by the sword, because we've now established that rove of this city has been guilty of idolatry. Itmar, Rabbi Yochanan Omar, Donin Vesoklin, Donin Vesoklin. Rabbi Yochanan adopts the same approach as Ula just mentioned. Reish Lakish Omar, Marbin Lohem Bote Dinim. Reish Lakish says that it's not necessary to execute each individual immediately and then judge the next individual and execute him immediately. Rather, we increase the number of courts and have the city judged in one day. And then, like, I would see immediately, I'll see within a day, and within a day, of course, there's no problem of Inui Hadin, so I'll see within one day if Rove of the city is guilty of idolatry, because I've increased the number of courts. We now have a long question, as you can see, indicated by the encircled kuf to the left-hand side of the Gemara text with a vertical dashed line, indicating that these several lines of Gemara that are opposite the dashed vertical line are part of the question. So the Gemara asks, is this so? Eini, is this solution of Reish Lakish tenable? The Omar Rav Chama Bar Yosi, Omar Rav Oshaya, V'hotseso es ho'ishahu, oy es ho'isho hahi. That's the Pasuk, and the Pasuk is in the singular. In other words, you have the man or the woman shall be taken out to be executed. Ish v'isha ata motzi l'sharecha. L'sharecha means your gates. It's a reference to the local Sanhedrin Ketana, courts of 23 that were in each city. they are designed to prosecute individual capital cases. However, v'i atomotzi kol ho'ir kulo l'sharecha, the issue of an ir hanidachas is not judged by local courts, but rather by the Sanhedrin Hagodol, which is in Yerushalayim, in the Beis Hamikdash. Ela, so how are we to understand Reish Lakish? Marbin lohen bote dinen uma einin bedinehen. The solution is as follows: we'll have an increased number of courts to investigate the situation, not to judge the case, but to look into the case. And if they've determined that the rove of the city has engaged in idolatry, umaskinon lehu lebeis din hagadol, they are then brought up to the Sanhedrin Hagadol in Yerushalayim, the gamri lehu ledinayhu, and there the verdict is reached, the katli lehu, and they are executed as an ir hanidachas by the sword. Hakei sakei es yirshvei o'ir v'chulei. Tanu Rabbanan. The Tanaic source that shows up now is a source that we've seen earlier in the Perek. Hachameres v'hagameles ho'iveres mimokom lemokom. We can call this a wagon train. Hachameres is a train of donkeys, gameles, of camels, that are passing from town to town. Lonu b'socha v'hudchu ima. If they slept in a particular town and ended up being convinced to serve idols together with the town that they were encamped in, im nishtohu sham shloishim yom, if they have encamped in that town for 30 days, and after being there for 30 days they went for the avodah zarah, they went into the practice of idolatry, then hein b'sayef u'mamonon ovad, they are to be killed by the sword and their property destroyed, because they're considered part of the Ur Hanidachas. Pachos mikan, if this wagon train that has encamped in town has been there less than 30 days, hein beskila, they are not treated as part of the town. They are killed by stoning. Umamonon polat, and their money is saved. So what do we see as the standard for being part of a community? According to this source, 30 days. And that's what we've dashed underlined. Viramini, we raise a contradiction from another source. Mishnah in Rova Basra says, Kamo ye b'ir v'ye ka'an she'o ir, how long must one be in a city and be considered part of the city in terms of contributing to the different local taxes? Yud Beis Chodesh, 12 months. So that we see from this source, and we've dashed underlined the expression Yud Beis Chodesh to show the contrast between this and the source just above. Here, you require 12 months of residence in order to become part of the city. Seems to be a contradiction. Omar Rava, Lo Kashya. There is no contradiction. The concept of becoming part of a city depends on what are you considering him part of the city for? With regard to what is he be considered part of the city? So the Gemara explains, Ho lemeve mi b'nei masa, ho lemeve mi yasve masa. One standard, the 12-month standard, applies to one who is to be considered a ben masa. And the 30-day standard is to be considered mi yoshvei ho'ir. The term yoshvei ho'ir is applicable to the ir hanidachas. The term b'nei masa is applicable to certain types of local taxes. The Hotanya, we bring a Tanaic source that supports this differentiation. The source, as you can see, appears just like the sources above in a frame. The source is the topic behind this source has to do with one who vows not to benefit from others. Hamudar hano, example one, mi bnei ho'ir, one who vows not to benefit from the bnei ho'ir, and he uses that expression in his vow. So, from whom can he not benefit? Im yesh adam shenishto hashem yud beis chodesh, osur lehenos mimenu. If there's a person that's dwelt there for 12 months, so this speaker, the mudur hano, cannot benefit from him. Pochos mikan mutur lehenos mimenu. If the man taking the vow said, I don't want to benefit from b'nei masa, and there's someone in the town that has been there less than 12 months, so the speaker can benefit from him. Another case is someone who's mudr hana biyoshve ha'ir im neshtoya shloshim yom osir lehenos menu. If the person has dwelt there for 30 days, then the speaker cannot benefit from this fellow, because he said, I don't want to benefit from Yoshvei Ha'ir. And Yoshvei Ha'ir is determined by residence of 30 days. However, Pachos Mikain, if the person has dwelt there less than 30 days, so Mutar Lehenos Menu, he is not included in this vow, because less than 30 days is not sufficient time to be considered Yoshvei Ha'ir. Hachareim osov es kol asher ba v'chulei. Tonu Rabbanon. The Gemara now presents a new Tanaic source. The source opens up with a quote from a pasuk. On the side of our Gemara, we've written in Dvorim, Perek Yud Gimel, Psukim Tesayin, and Yud Zayin. So let's read through the Psukim first, based on what we've written in on the side. Hakei sake es yoshvel irahi lefi chorev. Hachareim oisav v'es kol asherbo v'es behemto l'fi chorev v'es kol shlolo tikboitz el toich rechoivo v'sarafto bo'esh es ho'ir v'es kol shlolo l'kolil Hashem elokecho v'oiso teilo lom lo sibona oi. We turn back to the Gemara. Tonu Rabbanan. Hachareim oisav prat l'nichsei tzadikim shebechutzo la, to the exclusion of the property of the righteous that is outside the city. In other words, what is destroyed? All the property of the city is destroyed, with the exception of the property of the righteous inhabitants, which is located outside the city. The Eskol Asher Ba, the Pasuk says that is destroyed. The Rabbis Nichsei Tzadikim Shebesocha. This comes to include, in the destruction, property belonging to those minority righteous people, the property that is located in the city. Shlala, that's from the Pasuk, velo shlal shemayim, and not property that belongs to heaven. Belongs to heaven refers to items labeled as holy. V'eskol shlala, l'rabbis nichsei rishoyim shechutza la. This part of the Pasuk comes to include property of the wicked, of those who violated Avodah Zarah, who are inhabitants of the town, and the property is outside the town. That property too is to be destroyed. Omar Rabbi Shimon, mitneima omro teiro nichsei tzadikim shebesecho yovdu. Why is it that the property of the righteous that's located in the town is to be destroyed? After all, the owners of the property are righteous. So the answer is, mi goram lahem shiyadu besocha. What caused these righteous people to live in this city of evil? Mamonam. They were drawn after their property. These people, though they are themselves righteous and did not follow the Avodah Zarah, but why are they living here? Because they have property here. Lefikach mamonam ovad. Because of that, those items are to be destroyed, because they, in a sense, caused the owners to be here in this town. Omar Mar, v'es kol shlolo tikbots, l'rabbis nichsei rishoyim shebechutza la. The posuk says, and the halacha that follows says, that in the case of a condemned city, condemned for idolatry, the violators who constitute the majority of the city, the rishoyim, if they have property outside the city, it is to be destroyed. We see a triangle form appearing in our marking system in the Gemara. On the side, we have a note, Memros shel Rav Chisda beinyan chafotzim shel ir hanidachas. We'll have a couple of comments of Rav Chisda concerning property of an ir hanidachas. So Rav Chisda says he qualifies Tanaic source that stated property of Rishoyim that's outside the city is to be destroyed. Amar Rav Chisda, uvenikbotzim lesocha. We're talking about portables, property that can be gathered into the city. Rashi, in the outside column toward the top, fourth line from the top, Amar Rav Chisda, uvenikbotzim lesocha, nichsi Rishoyim hakroivim le'ir, shichol mekabtzim lesocha b'osuyim atzmo, shekoinsin shalil le'rechoiv, the property of the Rishayim that can be gathered into the town on the same day that the rest of the town's property is being gathered to the public square for burning, Hein Avudim Imo. Avol, Rechoikim, property that's far away, De'ein Magiyim Le'ir, that won't get to the town on that same day that the rest of the local property is gathered into the town square, Einon Avudim, they are not destroyed. V'davka Shekvar Hoyu L'socha, we're talking about items that were once in the town. However, the property in question is entrusted right now to others outside the town. Avol, if you have property that belonged to the Rishoyim, lo hoyu me'olam b'socha, property that was never in the town, even though legally it's owned by the Rishoyim, by the evil that followed the Avodah Zarah, kagon d'naflam b'yerusha, example would be property that fell to them as an inheritance, but physically was never in the town, even though the owners are Rishoyim, lo karino bei shlola, v'ein hamomon ova, that's not considered part of the spoils of that town, property of that town, and hence it is not destroyed. Continuing in the Gemara, Amar of Chizda, pigdoinus shel anshe yir hanidachas mutarin, the entrusted articles of the anshe yir hanidachas are allowed, they're not destroyed. What do we mean by the pigdonos, the entrusted articles? Hechidomi, I lema, and you'll notice with the double underlining, we have established a series effect. And this is explained by our note on the side, Nosei Mivneh. So we have written in, that you see a double line feature, Shlovim Shel Birur, these are stages in clarification, Lovin Mahem HaPigdonos Shel Ir HaNidachas Shel Chizda Matir, stages in trying to understand what Rav Chisda was allowing. So we turn back to the Gemara. Stage Aleph, I lema v'ir acheres v'isnu b'gavo. Outsiders from another community entrusted their articles to the people living in the Ir HaNidachas. And Rav Chisda is saying that those articles are mutar, are allowed, they're not destroyed. Pshita de mutarim, the Gemara says, I don't need Rav Chisda to tell me that. It's obvious that they're mutar. Lav shlola hu. It's not the property of that particular city, of the Ir HaNidachas. It belongs to people outside the Ir HaNidachas. V'yelo didhu. V'isnehu b'ir acheres. So what Rav Chisda might be referring to is articles belonging to the Anshi Ir HaNidachas that are entrusted to people in another city. Well, the Gemara asks, "E dinikbotzim l'socha my mutarin." If they can be gathered into the town that day, why should they be mutar? We just saw Rav Chisda in his previous comment, the previous triangle, saying that dinikbotzim l'socha is destroyed. The E ain nikbotzim l'socha ho amris chadazimna. And if you'll tell me that they are not, they're far away, they can't be gathered into the town that same day. So Rav Chisda already informed us that it's mutter in his previous comment. So what do I need the second triangled comment for? That which we said just now, that he said it, ho amr chadazimna, you'll notice we have an arrow to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text indicating that there was a previous comment to this effect, and we have an arrow up a few lines up to make it easier to find where that hadazim and where that one time was already. So the Gemara goes on, loy. Li'olam di'ir acheres demifkiri besocho. Rav Chisda's comment is necessary to describe outsider's property that was entrusted to people living in the Ir HaNidachas. And we asked, it seems to be obvious that it's mutter. What do I need Rav Chisda to tell me that for? And here, what are we talking about? Rav Chisda, the second Rav Chisda triangle, is informing us that even though the B'nai Ir HaNidachas, the people of the idolatrous city, accepted upon themselves responsibility for those items. In other words, they guaranteed the security of the entrusted articles. Mahu detema, I might have thought, given the kabbalah le'achraya, since they accepted guarantees concerning that which they are watching, kedidei dami, it's maybe to be viewed as if it's theirs. After all, they've taken responsibility for the articles. Kamash malon, this is what Rav Chisda informs us, that even though the Anshei Arei Dachas accepted responsibility for these entrusted articles, they remain mutter. Omar Rav Chisda. Notice again, we have a triangle. Another comment concerning a property of Ir HaNidachas made by Rav Chisda. So, Rav Chisda says, point number one, behema, and you'll see point number two at the end of the line, isa, which refers to dough. We've squiggled underlined these two expressions so that you can see quickly the two items Rav Chisda will be discussing. So the first item, behema, chetzio shel ir hanidachas v'chetzio shel ir acheres, asura. If you have an animal that's owned jointly by a member of the ir hanidachas, the idolatrous city, and someone outside the city, they have a partnership in a cow, and the city has been condemned as an idolatrous city, asura, that cow is forbidden. Isa, a hunk of dough, chetzeh shel ir hanidachas v'chetzeh shel ir acheres, muteres. The dough that's half of the ir hanidachas and half that belongs to someone outside the town, this dough is muter, is allowed. It's not completely forbidden. My taima, what is the explanation for making this distinction? After all, both items are jointly owned, so why does the halacha make a distinction? The answer is, behema keman delo pli godami, a cow, you cannot look at it as if it's split. What do we mean by that? If someone wants to eat a piece of meat, the entire cow needs to be slaughtered. Esau, dough, on the other hand, is something that you can divide up. Each one takes his half. Keman the pligodomi. Even though it's right now one hunk of dough, it's viewed as if it's split up because it's something that can be split up. We continue in the Gemara noticing a new geometric form. This is explained on the side under the Mivneh, the structural note. You notice a house form on the side of the Gemara, and it says She'elos binyanei rechush shel ir hanidachas. It's a couple of questions concerning property of ir hanidachas. Boy Rav Chisda. Later we'll have boy Rav Yosef. Rav Chisda asks behemas ir hanidachas mahu detishani bo shchita letara midei nevela. Translated is, does the slaughtering, the ritual slaughtering, the halachic slaughtering of a behemoth, the shechita of the behemoth, cause the animal to be tohor from that which would otherwise be tumas nevela? In other words, if an animal drops dead or an animal is murdered, the corpse is called a nevela and it imparts tuma, ritual impurity. If an animal is slaughtered ritually, legally, halachically, through shechita, which is a very specific means, a way of killing an animal, if one does the shechita method, the kosher slaughtering method, that animal is not only under normal circumstances mutter to eat, but it also does not impart tuma. It's tohar from tumas nevela. When dealing with the behemoth of an ir hanidachas, the slaughtering of it is not going to help. The kosher slaughtering of it is not going to help to allow it to be eaten because it's part of the property of an ir hanidachas. The question is the animal that's ritually slaughtered, is it metame nevela or not? Ordinarily, the animals of the ir hanidachas are simply killed by a sword, which is not kosher slaughtering. It's a simple killing of the animal. And those are metama nevela. What happens if we choose to kill the animal through ritual slaughtering, through kosher slaughtering? That's Rav Chisda's question, and the question bears down on the issue of tumas nevela. So as we go on in the Gemara, we'll notice Aleph, and then when you see an Aleph, you always look for the Beis, and so you'll notice O Dilma Beis. The Gemara presents two sides of the question. On the one hand, Aleph, Lefi Chorev, Omar Achmona, the Torah says, the animal is to be killed through a sword. Lo sha shachta mishchat, v'lo shna katla miktal. It doesn't matter, as far as the Torah is concerned, how you use the sword to kill the animal, either piercing the animal, or shachta mishchat would mean through a kosher slaughtering. It's all the same, and hence there would be tumas nevela as if it were killed by stabbing it. Odemo. Another possibility is kevan deshachta, since you chose that specific means of killing it, the kosher slaughtering, mehanya lo shchita. The shchita will have a beneficial effect to remove the tumas nevela. My, what is the conclusion? Teku, the Gemara says that remains unresolved. Boy, Rav Yosef, seor noshim tzidkonios mahu, the hair of the righteous women living in the Irani Dachas, what is the din? Omar Rava. Rava responds with a comment made in a tone of wonderment. He says, "Bitmiha, ha de rishoyos asur. Are you to conclude from here that the hair of the wicked women is forbidden? Tikbats visaraptoksiv. The pasuk says, property that can be gathered and burnt without any interposing steps, that is what's destroyed. It equals mi she'eno mechusar elo kivitza ustrefa, property that lacks only gathering and burning. Yosazeh, to the exclusion of the hair of the head of the evil women, shemechusar tlisha ukvitza ustrefa. It's missing another step. It's missing the detachment step, the shaving of the hair, and then the gathering and eventual burning. And since it's missing an additional step before it's destroyed, so it's not considered part of the property of the Ir HaNidachas. Elo Omar Rava, Bepeo Nochris. We're talking about, we'll refer to Peo Nochris by the term wig. So Rav Yosef is asking, what is the din with regard to the wigs of the righteous women living in the Ir HaNidachas? But this too needs further clarification. Hey Chidomi. What are the circumstances behind the question? E de mechuba begufa, if we're talking about she's wearing it on her head right now, it's tied to her body, meaning she's wearing it on her head right now. Kegufa damyo, it's like her body, and just like nothing happens to her clothing that she's wearing, because we're talking about the righteous women of that city, so too we won't burn the wig that she's wearing. So what's the question that Rav Yosef is asking? Lo tzricha, the question of Rav Yosef needs to be raised. The toli besivta, the wig owned by the righteous woman is hanging on a hook right now. It's not; she's not wearing it at the point that the execution or the destruction takes place. Kinichse tzadikim shebesocha domi ve'ovad. Do we consider it the wig that's on the hook, like the standard we apply in general to the property of the righteous that's in the city, and we know it is destroyed, as we saw above, or possibly when dealing with this wig, the standard is different. Even though it's not on her hair, since she goes out, when she goes out, she puts this on, it's like her clothing, even though she's not wearing it right now, but she's going to wear it soon after. Rashi says, toward the end of his commentary in the outside column, Kevan de Ailo Venafko, Regilo Lekoshra Todir. She's accustomed to tying it to her head regularly. Afapi Shalo Kosharto Afshov, even though right now she didn't tie it on. Komokom Shee Sham Nidon Kemalbush Shalo. Wherever it's located, wherever this wig is located, it's to be viewed as clothing on her. The Hoshaito Daito La, because at all the time her mind is on the wig. Ukishar Malbushin Domi, and since her mind is on it all the time, it's like the rest of the clothing that she's wearing, and nothing happens to it. So the question is raised, how do we view the wig of the righteous woman that's hanging on a hook in the town? Teku, this too remains unresolved. Tonu Rabbanon, we have a new Tanaic source. We're going to be dealing with the issue of the public square. What happens if a city doesn't have a public square? Ein lo rechoiv, eino nasis yirani dachas divrei b'shmoel. If a city does not have a public square, then it cannot become an yirani dachas. This is Rabbi Shmuel's opinion. Rabbi Akiva omer, ein lo rechoiv, oisin lo rechoiv. If it doesn't have a public square, if at the time the people serve the idols, it doesn't have a public square, and now time has come to judge the community, so we will make a public square.
b'may komiflegi? What is the basis of this controversy between Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Kiva? Mor savar rechoiva meikora mashma. Rabbi Shmuel holds that when the Torah says that you gather the spoils into its square, it's referring to a square that was there at the outset. Meikara means at the beginning. And if there wasn't a rechov at the beginning, then there's no ir hanidachas proclaimed. Umar Safar, Rabbi Kiva holds, rechova hashtonami mashma. The term rechova can refer to the public square that's there right now, that was recently made after they committed their offense.
Vahegdeshel sheba yiftu v'chulei. Tonu rabbanan. Hoyu bo kochim. If in the ir hanidachas there are kochim, things dedicated to the Beis HaMikdash. Kochei mizbeach yomusu. If they're kochim mizbeach, dedicated to the altar. Sacrifices. Animals that have been designated to be a sacrifice. Yomusu, they are to be killed. Kochei berek avayis, yiftu. Items that have been dedicated to the temple repair fund. Those are to be redeemed. Utrumos, yirakfu. Trumos, the tithe given to Kohanim, is to rot. Umaiser sheni v'kisvei hakodesh yiganzu. Maiser sheni is a tithe taken during the 7-year Shemitah cycle, years 1, 2, 4, and 5. A tenth of the produce that a person produces is taken to Yerushalayim to be eaten in Yerushalayim. That's called Maiser sheni. Maiser sheni and kisvei hakodesh, holy writings, yiganzu, they are to be buried. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Behemta, Velo, Behemas, Bechor, Umaiser. When the Torah uses the term Behemta, it's telling you Behemta is killed, the animals of the city are killed, but not the firstborn or tithed animals. Meiser is Meiser, Behema. Every year, a person takes the newborns of that year, all those animals that are less than a year, and he has them pass through a narrow passageway and counts them off 1 through 10, and number 10 is declared Meiser Behema, and that is to be offered as a sacrifice. So according to Reb Shimon, when the Torah says Behemta is killed, this comes to exclude the firstborns and the Meiser Behema. Shlola Prat Lekesef Hekdish Vekesef Meiser. The term shlola means the property of the city, comes to the exclusion of money that has been sanctified, or kesef meiser. This is money that has been used to redeem the meiser sheni food. In the event that someone can't bring all of his meiser sheni to Yerushalayim, he redeems its sanctity and transfers it to money. That's kesef meiser. The Gemara, at this point, will go over the details of this source. Omar Mar, it was stated above, Hoyu bo kochim. Kochei mizbeach yomusu. We explained that if there were animals dedicated to be sacrifices, to be slaughtered and offered on the altar, those animals are to be killed. Ve'ama yomusu, why should they die? Why should they die as part of the ir hanidachas? Yiru ad yistavu. Why not have them graze until they develop a mum? Yistavu is the development of a mum, an imperfection. V'imochru, and then have them sold. V'yuplu demeim l'nedava, and then the money that you fetch for the animal that has developed a mum, that money can then be used as an adava to bring korbanos in the Beis HaMikdash. So very simply, why, if you have a korban in an ir hanidachas, why is it killed with the rest of the property? To answer this, we have a couple of approaches. We have Rabbi Yochanan, we've underlined his name, and called him number one, and the next line you'll see Reish Lakish number two. On the side of our Gemara, we've also offered a topic heading, Behemos Kochim Shel Ir Hanidachas. Hezberim Shirabi Yochanan Reish Lakish Lama Katani Bereisho Shalabraiso Diamusu. Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish will come to explain the ratio, the first opinion in the Braisa regarding sacrifices, that says the Kochei Mizbeach are to be killed. So now we turn back to the Gemara. Rabbi Yochanan Omar Zevech Rishoyim To'eva. The question had been not only why are they killed, but why not redeem them and offer, use the money to buy sacrifices in the Beis HaMikdash. So Rabbi Yochanan says, the Pasuk says, Zevach Rishoyim, the sacrifices of the wicked, To'eva, are abominable. This means that even the money one fetches for those animals
since it was owned by the wicked, even the money is forbidden and has no use as far as the Beis HaMikdash is concerned. Reish Lakish Amar, Mamon Bailam Hu, V'Hocha, B'Kotshim Shechayev Bachri Yusan, V'Rebi Shimon Hi, the Omar Mamon Bailam Hu. Reish Lakish says that the Kotshim that are featured in this Tanaic source, Mamon Bailam Hu, it means it's considered as if it's owned, as if it's the property of the owner. And since it's considered the property of the owner, even though it's a holy item, it's an animal that's been dedicated to the Beis HaMikdash, but since it's considered property of the owner, it's treated as the rest of the property of the Anshei Aron Nidachos and is killed. Now, when we say that Kotshim is Mamon Bailam, what Kotshim is included under that heading? So the first approach to explain Reish Lakish, we've labeled this an Aleph because the Gemara will offer an alternative approach very shortly, but the first approach to explain Reish Lakish when he said Mamon Bailam, this is referring to sacrifices, Kotshim Shechayev Bachri Yusan, sacrifices that the owner accepted upon himself responsibility that if anything should happen to that animal, he will replace it. V'Rebbe Shimon, this is in accordance with the opinion of Rebbe Shimon that says that Kotshim that a person accepts responsibility for is Mamon, the Omar Mamon Bailam Hu. The Gemara asks a simple question. How can you say that the Tanakama, that the first opinion of this Tanaic source, is according to Rebbe Shimon? V'ha mi de seifa Rebbe Shimon. V'ha mi de seifa Rebbe Shimon hi. Reisha, not Rebbe Shimon. From the fact that Rebbe Shimon appears in the Seifa, you can see by glancing up at the Tanaic source, Rebbe Shimon's name was underlined. He's the author of the Seifa of the source. So it must be, since he's entering the picture in the Seifa, the Reisha is not Rebbe Shimon. Therefore, we have a second explanation for Reish Lakish. And we're calling this Beis. Remember, Reish Lakish said that the Reisha that spoke about Kotshim and Kotshei Mizbech Yamusu, Reish Lakish said we're talking about Mamon Bailim. What do we mean by that? So in the Bay's explanation, the Kotshim Kalim Valibad Rabbi Yossi Aglili Yomar Kotshim Kalim Mamon Bailim. The Reisha is talking about light level sacrifices. Light level is as opposed to there's Kotshei Kotshim and Kotshim Kalim. Kotshei Kotshim are holier level, higher level sanctity. Briefly stated, Kotshim Kalim includes korbanos like a korban shlomim. A Kotshei Kotshim includes things like a chatas, ola, and osham. So the ratio of this Tanaic source is referring to Kotshim Kalim, for example, a korban shlomim, according to Rabbi Yossi Aglili. Rabbi Yossi Aglili's opinion is that Kotshim Kalim is considered Mamon Bailam, is considered property of the owner. That even though it's dedicated as a sacrifice, since it's a low-level sanctity, it's considered still as owned property. In our marking system, we featured here a bracketed section. Our note in the margin says where the star appears. So graim elu einom l'shem dilok. The purpose of these brackets is not for the purpose of skipping. Elo laharois, rather to demonstrate the adkan ikur hatshuva shereish lakish. At this point in the Gemara, we've offered a conclusive answer to explain Reish Lakish. Namely, Reish Lakish, who said that the Reish of the Braisa that explained the Kotshim is Be'ach Yamusu, this is talking about Kotshim Kalim according to Rabbi Yossi Aglili. That's an accepted answer as far as Reish Lakish is concerned. After the brackets, the Gemara will then analyze why each one doesn't say like the other, why Rabbi Yochanan does not say like Reish Lakish, and then raises a question, why Reish Lakish doesn't say like Rabbi Yochanan. However, before we get to that point, the Gemara has a technical question. Once you establish that the Reisha that says Yamusu is talking about Kotshim Kalim, what is going to be the din with regard to Kotshei Kotshim? So let's continue reading in the Gemara. Avo Kotshei Kotshim Mai, what should we understand with regard to Kotshei Kotshim that belongs to someone in the Ir Hanidachas? What is the din? Yifdu. We can infer that if it's Kotshim Kalim that are killed, so it must be the Kotshei Kotshim are to be redeemed. Well, if that be the case,
Adetoni Seifa, instead of teaching me in the Seifa the following Kodshe Berek Habayis Yifdu, Kodshe Berek Habayis is a different realm of sanctity. It's sanctity, it's things dedicated to the temple repair fund. Why, in order to illustrate Yifdu, redemption, do you go to a different realm, namely Kodshe Berek Habayis? Liflog v'lusner b'dida. Why not make the distinction? Liflog is to make a distinction and teach b'dida within the realm of Kodshe Mizbeach the following. Teach as follows. Bamed v'amamurim. When do we say Yomusu? B'kodshim kalim. Avo kodshe kodshim yiftu. Now, since it doesn't say this, since this distinction is not made, it weakens the entire answer of Reish Lakish, that the Bay's answer. Since we don't make the distinction contrasting Kodshim Kalim with Kodshe Kodshim, it creates a weakness in our answer. The reason for this being is that it seems to be that the contrast is between Kodshe Berek Habayis and all Kodshe Mizbeach, not only Kodshe Kalim, but also Kodshe Kodshim. So the question is, why in explaining Reish Lakish did we emphasize Kodshe Kalim? So the Gemara answers as follows. Let us stick to the answer that the answer we gave for Reish Lakish, that we're talking about that the source above that said Yomusu is talking specifically about Kodshim Kalim. If you'll ask, so why in contrast to Yomusu in citing Yiftu we turn to a different realm, the reason for that is very technical. Kevon de'ika chatos shemesu baleha de'lemisa asla. Since there's an example, there's one example of Kodshe Kodshim that also is killed, I can't make a blanket statement, lo psikole, I can't make a blanket statement regarding Kodshe Kodshim that it's Yiftu. Because of this example, because there's an exception, I prefer to avoid Kodshe Kodshim as a realm of Yiftu, as a realm in which redemption takes place, even though in truth you could redeem the Kodshe Kodshim. But since we have an exception within that realm, namely Chatos Shemesu Baleha, that's a situation where if someone had dedicated a Korban Chatos, this is a Korban brought when one inadvertently violates offenses that otherwise would be punishable by Koreis, by being cut short. If he does it inadvertently, he brings a Korban Chatos. In the event, though, that the person who brought the Korban, who was supposed to bring the Korban Chatos, dies, that animal also is to be killed, not redeemed. But that's a rather exceptional case. In general, though, Kodshe Kodshim of an Ir Hanidachas would be redeemable. But it didn't choose to use that as a contrasting example, but rather went to the realm of Kodshe Berek Habayis, because in that case, all Kodshe Berek Habayis, without exception, would be redeemed. Bishlamo Rabbi Yochanan lo amar Koresh Lakish. I understand why Rabbi Yochanan did not accept Reish Lakish's approach, Dichtiv Zevach Rishoyim To'eva, because there is no hope for even redeeming it, as the Pasuk indicates. So Rabbi Yochanan stated his position that redemption was not an option because the Pasuk precludes that. Elo Reish Lakish Maitaim Alo Amak Rabbi Yochanan. So why didn't Reish Lakish give as an answer to the Tanaic source, the Brisa that we're trying to explain, why did he not offer an explanation like that of Rabbi Yochanan? So the Gemara answers, Omar Loch, Reish Lakish says, Ki aminon zevach rishoyim to'eva, this pasuk that says that the sacrifices of the wicked are abominable, Hani mili hecho de'isnu b'inayu, that is true when the animal itself is extant, is around. Isnu, they are b'inayu, they are extant themselves. Avol hocha, but in the case that we would opt to redeem them, to transfer their holiness onto money, kevon de'ishtani ishtani, since they've undergone a change, since it went from animal to money, the pasuk of zevach rishayim to'eva would not apply. And from that standpoint, I would not have said yamusu. I would have, if redemption was an option, it in fact would work. So then how do I explain, says Reish Lakish, the example of Yamusu? That's why he has to come on to the case of Kachim Kalim, according to Rabbi Yossi Aglili, which is viewed as Mamon Bailim, which is viewed as property of the owner himself, and hence it's treated like the rest of the property of the Irani Dachas, and destroyed. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Behem Ta, Velo Behemas Bechor Umayser. B'mai Askinan. If we're talking about Bechor and Meiser that are Tomim, they are without imperfection, then Shlal Shomayim Hu, it's considered property of heaven, and the Pasuk Shlala would have excluded them from being destroyed. So Reb Shimon, who cites a word from the Pasuk Behemta, which is to exclude Behemas Bechor Meiser, if we're talking about Behemas Bechoru Maisur that are Tomim, I don't need the word Behemta to exclude that. That's excluded by the other term, Shlala. So, what is Behemta coming to exclude? Elo? Bebale Mumin. Bechor Umaisur that developed an imperfection. And as a result of the Pasuk, claims Reb Shimon, the word behemta says behemta is executed, is killed, but not the Bechor Umayser that have Amum. The Gemara asks, I don't understand, why are they not executed? Shlala ninu. If they have Amum, if they have an imperfection, so they're not offered as sacrifices, so it is considered part of the property. Why are they being excluded from being killed? In order to explain Rabbi Shimon, we now have a new geometric form, the house form. On the side, we have a topic heading and mivneh, structural information explained. So you see on the side of your Gemara a house form. Machlokas Amoroyim, we'll see an Amoraic controversy. The Hezber Shitas Rabbi Shimon, Lagabi Bechoru Meiser Behema Shel Ir Hanidachas. In an attempt to explain Rabbi Shimon's opinion with regard to the Bechor and the Meiser Behema of an Ir Hanidachas. We explained Meiser Behema was the tithing of one-tenth of one's animals every year, those animals that are born every year. Omar Ravina, Li'olam Bebali Mumin. The Bechor and Meiser Behema featured in the source, in our Mishnah, that Reb Shimon says are not killed, we are talking about Bali Mumin. And even so, even though they are not offered as sacrifices, nevertheless they're not killed with the rest of the property of the city. Umi Shinechal Betoiras Behemta. What is killed as part of the city? Animals that are eaten, animals that are nechal, that would otherwise be eaten as behemta, meaning behemos shel irhani dachas, where they don't have an accompanying name, they don't have a shame levai. They're called behemta shel irhani dachas. Yotsu elu, to the exclusion of these, namely the Bechor and Meiser Behema that developed a mum, she'ein ne'echolim b'toras behemta. They're not considered the animals of the Irhani Dachas in a simple form. Elo b'toras Bechor u'Meiser. D'shlal shamayim ninhu. They are called, Rashi explains, they are called behemas Bechor u'Meiser shel Irhani Dachas. Once again, those animals to be killed are the animals that are referred to without a shem levi, that we would call behemas irhani dachas. However, once you add terminology to describing the animal, for example, the case of the Bechor and Meiser, how are they described? They're not described as behemas irhani dachas. They're described as behemas Bechor u'Meiser shel irhani dachas. And as a result of that, since they have this attached term and terminology to label them, and the terminology indicates they are Bechor or Meiser Behema, that categorizes them as Shlal Shemayim. In other words, there is a lot to a name. The fact that it's categorized as such puts them into a different realm, and they're considered Shlal Shemayim, property of heaven, and not considered the property of the city.
And that's what Rabbi Shimon was referring to in the source when he said, Behemto velo behemas bechor umayser. Upliga de Shmuel. Ravina is saying something, and we'll see later, we'll try to hone in on the point where there is a difference, but he is at odds with Shmuel's approach. The Omar Shmuel, Hakol Korev v'Hakol Nifteh. Shmuel says, makes a comment that's very vague. He says, everything is offered and everything is redeemed. My Ko'omar, what does he mean by this? Hochi Ko'omar. So the Gemara will break down Shmuel's comment into two sections, and we've labeled them Aleph, and a couple lines later you'll see Beis. Thusly, Shmuel means to say, Hochi Ko'amar, Kol Shekorev Kishuhu Tam, V'nifte Kishu Bal Mum, all those creatures that, if they are without imperfection, they're called Tam, they're wholesome, they're complete. And as such, since they are Tamimim, they're Tam, they can be offered as sacrifices. Those animals that when tam are offered and when becoming a mum, they are redeemable, their holiness can be transferred to money, mishlal imit, those are excluded by the fact that Torah uses the word shlala. V'chol shekorev kishu tam v'eino nifte kishu bamum, those creatures, those animals that are offered as sacrifices when they're tam, however, when they develop a mum, they are not redeemed, and that refers specifically to Bechor and Meiser Behema. They occupy a unique status in Halacha, and that is that when they become Balei Mum, they are not redeemed. They are simply slaughtered and eaten, in the case of Meiser Behema, by the owner, and in the case of a Bechor, Baal Mum, by the Kohen, but not brought as sacrifices. The Gemara spells that out, Kegoin, Bechor, or Meiser, that those are examples of things that are not redeemable. So those kind of things are mi behema nafka. They are excluded from the Torah's use of the word behema, which means that a tam, bechor, umayser behema, are not killed because they are not considered behemta, but a baal mum of a bechor umayser, according to Shmuel, is killed. And this is not like the approach taken by Ravina. We've included in our Gemara Shas Ozer a little chart in the margin. The chart's entitled Bechor Umayser Behema Shel Ir Hanidachas. We see across the top of the chart expressions Tam and Balmum, and we see down the side Ravina and Shmuel. What is the din, according to Ravina, of a Bechor Umayser Tam? So, it's not killed as part of the city. According to Ravina, that's excluded by the term Shlala. According to Ravina, a Bechor Umayser Baal Mum is also not killed, and that's excluded by the term Behemta. And we explained in the Gemara because those things have a Shem Levi. According to Shmuel, a Bechor or Meiser Tam is not killed, and that's excluded by the term Behemta. Notice the difference between Ravina and Shmuel as we look at the chart. Now, for the big difference, according to Shmuel, a Bechor or Meiser Baal Mum is killed, because it is called Behemta. It's considered, since the owners will eat it, Shmuel doesn't use the Svara of Shem Levi to exclude it, but since the owners eat it, it's called Behemta. It's called the animals of the city. Turning back to the Gemara, Trumos Yirakvu. We see a new geometric form. We see a diamond featured. And on the side of our Gemara, we have a Nosei Mivneh. Shtei Lishonos, these two triangles represent two versions, Shel Rav Chisda, Behesber, Trumos, Shel Yerhanidachas. In our attempt to explain the Mishnah's reference to the Truma tithe of an Yerhanidachas that is to rot. Omar Rav Chisda, Lo Shanu, the Mishnah that teaches they rot is taught lo shanu elo truma biyad Yisrael. If you're talking about truma that's still in the hands of the Yisrael, of the original owner, the original farmer, aval truma biyad koyin, once the truma has been given to the koyin who is to receive the truma, kevan de mamone hu, since it's considered the property of the koyin, tisaref. We're not going to apply the din of yirakfu, which is a special treatment of the food, the property, but rather tisaref means it's burnt like the rest of the property of the ir hanidachas. Namely, truma, once in the hands of the kohen, it becomes considered simple property of the kohen, and therefore it's treated as simple property of an ir hanidachas. Not so the case before the truma is given to the kohen. In such a case, it's treated in its unique fashion, namely yirakfu. Mosiv Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef raises an objection. Maiser sheni v'kisvei akodesh yigonzu. V'ha maiser sheni biad Yisrael, the maiser sheni tithe, when in the hands of the Yisrael, the owner, of the farmer, ketruma biad koyein domi, it's like truma in the hands of the koyein. Namely, maiser sheni in the hands of Yisrael is something he will eat. He'll bring it to Yerushalayim and eat it there. It's like truma in the hands of the koyein. It's something he will eat. V'kotani yigonzu. And nevertheless, the Mishnah teaches that the maiser sheni is to be buried, not to be burnt. So Rav Yosef is challenging Rav Chisda's observation beis. Rav Chisda's observation beis, we saw that truma biad koyin is to be burnt. Here, since we're paralleling truma biad koyin to the case of maiser sheni, we see the result is yigonzu, buried, not burnt. Elo I itmar hochi itmar. If Rav Chisda said something on this topic, he said it thusly. Omar Rav Chisda, lo yishanu elo truma biyad kohen. This idea of the Mishnah that says it is to be set aside to rot, in other words, not burnt, that's when you're talking about truma in the possession of the kohen. It's considered his mamon, and as a result of that, it's not to be eaten, it's to be set aside to rot. However, Rashi points out that we're not going to actually burn it because truma has a certain level of holiness associated with it. Continuing, Ela truma, aval truma biyad Yisrael, tinosein l'kayin shebi'ir acheres. Truma in the hands of the Yisrael, he hasn't given it yet to a kohen. Even though the Yisrael lives in an ir hanidachas, the truma that he hasn't given yet to a kohen is given to a kohen in another city. Tanan hosam. We have a Tanaic source that says, Isa shel maiser sheni p'tura min achalo divrei Rabbi Meir. Dough that's made from maiser sheni wheat is exempt from having the chala tithe removed from it. Many of you may know that when processing dough, when making dough, a certain amount of the dough is taken off and given to a kohen. It's one of the many different tithes that a kohen is entitled to receive. This tithe is called chala. If the dough, however, is made from maiser sheni, according to Rabbi Meir, it's exempt from this tithe, from the chala tithe. That's divrei Rabbi Meir. V'chachomim mechayvin. The chachomim say that one is, yes, obligated to give the maiser from the maiser sheni dough the chala tithe. Amar Rav Chisda, machloikis b'maiser sheni b'Yerushalayim. Rav Chisda interprets this source, and he qualifies when the machlokis exists. That's when you're dealing with maiser sheni in Yerushalayim. Rabbi Meir Sofar, Rabbi Meir who exempts it from chala holds, maiser sheni momon gavohu. Maiser sheni is considered property of heaven, and hence, as such, it doesn't have the rules of mundane property. Mundane property, namely mundane dough, needs a truma, a chala tithe removed from it. However, holy dough, the momon gavoa, momon belonging to on high, meaning belonging to shamayim, does not require a chala tithe removed. For Rabbanan Safri, Mamon Hedyotu. Rabbanan hold that Maiser Sheni Yerushalayim is considered owned property, mundane property, and hence there's a chiyuv, there's an obligation to take off the chala tithe. Avol, big vulin, the Maiser Sheni in the vulin outside the base, outside Yerushalayim, namely before it's been brought to Yerushalayim, Divrei Akol Potter, everyone would hold, even the Rabbanim will hold, that it's exempt because it's still considered Mamon Gavoa. Mosiv Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef raises an objection. Notice, in this under this diamond number 2 of Rav Chista, we have Rav Yosef raising an objection, just like we saw under the diamond number 1 of Rav Chista, there too Rav Yosef raised an objection, though the two discussions are not related to one another as far as the Gemara is presented, but since learning with the Shas Ozer and the marking system, we become sensitive to nuances in structure. So that's what we're pointing out right now, that you have Mosiv Rav Yosef in this second din of Rav Chista, just like you had it in the first din of Rav Chista. And notice, of course, that the Mosiv Rav Yosef in both cases is coming from the same source. So here Rav Yosef asks, Maiser Sheni V'Kisvei HaKodesh Yiganzu. This is a source dealing with, of course, the Maiser Sheni and the holy writings of an Ir HaNidachas. They are to be buried. B'mai Askinon. What are the circumstances? Before we go on, we ought to take note of the information we've included on the side of the Gemara. The Nosei, the topic we're dealing with, is Maiser Sheni B'Gvulin. Maiser Sheni, outside Yerushalayim, Mamon Gavoa Uptura Min Hachala. It's viewed as holy property and is exempt from the Chala tithe. The Mivneh, the structural note we have, we featured a triangle. And we explained Shlovim stages. Bavonas Hamokar Shemimenu Makshir Rav Yosef Eskushyoso. We're going to try to understand the source from which Rav Yosef raised his objection. In this source, there was featured Maiser Sheni of an Ir HaNidachas, and the result was Yigonzu, it's buried. So the triangles here will be stages in trying to understand the source. And we have a Heora, a little point of note. Chelek mi triangles b'shlav ha-kushyo v'chelek me'en b'shlav ha-tirutz. The triangles here, some of them will be appearing as in stages in order to develop Rav Yosef's question, and some of the triangles as you go on in the Gemara will be part of the Gemara after it presents its answer. But we're involved right now in stages in trying to understand this particular source. So Rav Yosef raises an objection to what Rav Chista explained from the source where it says Maiser Sheni and Kisvei HaKodesh Yiganzu. What are the circumstances? So the Gemara continues, E Lema B'Yerushalayim, if you're talking about the Maiser Sheni of Yerushalayim that has become an Ir HaNidachas, that can't be. Mi Havya Ir HaNidachas. Can Yerushalayim be the Ir HaNidachas? V'atanya, Asor Dvorim Nemru B'Yerushalayim, V'zu Echos Mehem, Enonas is Ir HaNidachas. There are 10 halachas that pertain to Yerushalayim, and one of them states that Yerushalayim cannot be declared an Ir HaNidachas. V'ela, B'ir Acheres. So the Maiser Sheni in the source of Yosef was talking about is Maiser Sheni that is from another town, the other town being an Ir HaNidachas, and it was brought to Yerushalayim before they went off the path. That's ve'elo bi'ir acheres v'askuhu legavo. It's Maiser Sheni that belongs to an Ir HaNidachas, but this Maiser Sheni had been brought to Yerushalayim before they went off. That's what v'askuhu legavo. They brought it in to Yerushalayim. What does the source say, according to this? It would be that Maiser Sheni is to be buried. The Gemara asks, but that's not reasonable. Ha koltuhu mechitzos. It was gathered in, or absorbed by, the walls of Yerushalayim. Namely, once it was brought into Yerushalayim, and we're saying that it was brought into Yerushalayim before they went off to become an Ir HaNidachas, the city's walls absorbed it, and it should be mutter ba'achila, it should be allowed to be in. It's considered part of Yerushalayim, no longer to be associated with the Yer HaNidachas. Elolav begvulim. So rather, we're talking about Maiser Sheni that has not been brought to Yerushalayim yet. V'kotoni yigonzu. And it says in the source, it's to be buried. Now, the question is, if Maiser Sheni begvulin, like Rav Chisdo said, is Dibrei HaKol Momon Gavoa, because he said Dibrei HaKol Potter, there's no need to tithe from Maiser Sheni begvulin because it's considered Momon Gavoa, so then it should be Mutter Ba'achila. Why would you want to bury it? The Oilam, the ear, HaNidachas. We're talking about Maiser Sheni of the ear HaNidachas. The Oskuhu Legavo, and it was brought into Yerushalayim. And as we said before, it was brought into Yerushalayim before they went astray. The question then is, so why don't they eat it there? Why does it say Yigonzu? V'hocha b'mayaskinon Shenitma, it became ritually impure, became tome. That's why Yigonzu. The Gemara asks, Velifrike, why not redeem it? Why do you say it has to be buried? Yomar Belozer, Minayim Maiser Sheni Shenitma Shepoidinoiso Afi Yerushalayim. From where do we know that Maiser Sheni became tome? It can be redeemed even in Yerushalayim. Talmud Lomar, Lo Suchal Say So. The pasuk that talks about redemption uses this expression, Lo Suchal, you cannot say so. Ve'ain Say Selachila. The pasuk therefore means you can no longer eat it. So what is this a reference to? Maiser Sheni that you cannot eat, namely it became tome, can be redeemed. So why would the source say Yigonzu concerning that? The Gemara goes on to say that Seis is a reference to Achilo, to eating. Shenemar, the pasuk says, Vayisah Masois Me'eis Panov. And they carried Masos, packages of food, from him. So we see that the word Masos, like the word Seis, is a reference to food. The question then is, it could have been redeemed. Why buried? Hacha b'mayaskinon. So the Gemara answers, we're talking about Maiser Sheni, not the money, not items that he brought from outside Shalom into town, but rather it's Maiser Sheni that he bought. Lokuach means purchased, that he purchased with Maiser Sheni money. This fellow had redeemed his produce onto money and brought the money to Yerushalayim, and in Yerushalayim he bought food, and that's called Lokuach b'Maiser Sheni. And if you'll ask why is it not eaten, well, it's because it became Tomei. The Gemara asks at the top of Kuf Yud Gimel, "V'lifrike, let it be redeemed." Tisnan halokuch because of Maiser Shenitma Yivde. Items bought with the money of Maiser Sheni that became Tomei can be redeemed. So the question is once again, if we're describing the source that said Maiser Sheni Yigonzu is talking about lokuch because of Maiser that became Tomei, why bury it? It can still be redeemed. So the Gemara answers, this source that said Yigonzu is Krib Yehuda, Diomar Yikover, he holds that Lokuch because of Maiser is to be buried, and that's why it says Yigonzu. Ihochi, my ir ya ir hanidachas. If that be the case, if this source is a source according to Buda, why does the source feature Maiser Sheni and Kisvei HaKodesh of ir hanidachas specifically? All cities, when dealing with Lokuch because of Maiser Sheni, that became Tomei, according to Rabbi Yehuda, is to be buried. Let's read the question again. Ihochi, my irya ir hanidachas. Why talk about ir hanidachas? Afilu de almanami. The same would be true with any other place. Eloli oilam betohar. We're talking about Maiser Sheni that was brought into Yerushalayim that did not become Tomei. The question then is, so why is it not eaten? Why don't you say koltulu mechitzos? We're talking about a case in this source that said the Maiser Sheni Yigonzu is the walls fell down. Talking about at the time of the destruction of Yerushalayim. Uchid Rava, and based on Rava's teaching, Diyama Rava, Mechitza Le'achol Doraisa. In order to eat Maaser Sheni, there is a need to have walls. In order to eat the Maaser Sheni in Yerushalayim, there must be walls. Likloit, the Rabbonan, the concept of Klitas Mechitzas, that once it's brought into Yerushalayim, it becomes part of Yerushalayim, that concept is rabbinic. V'chigozer Rabbonan, under what circumstances the Rabbonan impose this rule that Mechitzas Koltos, and as a result of Mechitzas Koltos, we would have said that it's not going to be considered part of the Ir Hanidachas anymore and should not be burnt. That concept was made ki isnu l'mechitza, when the Mechitza is around. Then we would say, Koltu Mechitzos, it becomes part of Yerushalayim and should be eaten, not burnt. However, ki lesnu l'mechitza, lo. But in the event that the wall fell down, then we don't say koltuhu mechitzos, and as a result of that, it's not considered niklat in Yerushalayim, and therefore the Maaser Sheni is to be buried. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.